meaning. And time is a precious thing. When we wake up in the morning.
Welcome back to Nocturnal Journal on WGN 720, and we're here in the studio with the legendary Buddy Guy. Thank you for joining us, Mr. Guy.
Thank you for having me.
And that's a track from a little bit of heard there of Rhythm and Blues, One Day Away with Keith Urban. When did you do that?
That had to be a couple of years ago.
Yeah?
Uh-huh.
And tell us the origin of that song, how that song came together.
Well, my producer, you know, I'm branded as a blues player, and a lot of stations don't play that type of blues anymore. You know, when we was all AM station, they played all varieties of music, gospel, jazz, and everything, and then you would hear a Muddy Waters or someone like that. But nowadays, you hardly ever hear a Muddy Waters record being played. So we were trying to get something. My producer wanted me to do something. Hopefully we could get a little more outplay on it. And I haven't heard. I'm superstitious with that. I didn't ask, did we get an outplay on it or not? But thanks to you, I just heard that.
That's what we're all about. What's it like to collaborate? You did a lot of collaborations. I know the record's a couple years old, but like with Keith Urban, what was it like to collaborate with somebody like that?
Well, number one, we didn't do that live together. I did the track, and then they take the tapes to him, and he put his version on there. Because a lot of time we do that better. Actually, we began to, like a lot of the super rock guys, you know, a lot of them don't even play and sing at the same time. They put a track down and then go back and listen over and over and over and over again, and you get more familiar with what you're doing by listening to it a long time before you put your voice or your music on it. So I don't know how long it took him to do that, but it took me, I think we was in there like about 21 days, not on that particular tune, but 21 days for the full album.
In prepping for the show, we were, that song's important to you, the lyrics and
yes.
The message.
Oh, yes.
Talk about why.
Well, you know, if you listen to most blues records, all records got a story. You know, and if you pay attention to it, maybe you don't pay attention to it until something happening, there's a lyric that touches you, whether it was a divorce or marriage or death or newborn. And we all sing about the life of a human being, it was as bad or good. And I learned that from the guys no longer with us. You know, I'm not original. I'm a student of the B.B. Kings and the Muddy Waters and the Howlin' Wolf and people like that, T-Bone Walker and so on.
You're on the show because this is the 30th, and you're going to start your residency on January 4th. That'll be the first night at the club.
Yes, yes.
Buddy Guy's.
Yeah.
How long have you been doing that now? Is it 20-something years, 30-something? Did you do it right when the club started?
No. Actually, I was on another corner, and I moved to this corner. But in the beginning, nobody thought that kind of blues was in that part of area. They were calling that a ghetto when I first moved down there.
You're talking about 700 South Wabash?
Yeah, but it was 754 at first.
Yeah, right.
And the late Stevie Ray Vaughan was still living, so there wasn't many people familiar with that as a blues club. And I called him in Pittsburgh. I said, "Steve, I need you to do me a favor." He said, "Who you want me to kill?" So I said, "I need you to come by my club and give me a boost." And he jumped on the plane and came there. And we had some of the greats, the Stones, the Eric Claptons, and the Lou Rawls, and all those people start showing up. And as of today, that club is, I had my staff to check it out, and I thought it was like 60% of foreigners, but my club is like 80 to 85% foreigners each night. And I have people, last night I was talking to some people from Chicago, and they came up and wanted to take a photograph. "You been here before?" "No, I've never been living right here in Chicago, you know." And then all of a sudden you find somebody from Australia, "Oh, this is my 15th time being here," you know. And
do super fans still come? Remember him?
He was in there last night.
Was he in there last night?
Yeah, he brought me my guitar picks last night. I got some new picks coming out. And he came up to me and said, I got the new picks for you. He gets them before I do.
Now, I did a piece on him for the Sun-Times. That was a while ago. But he said he saw you more than 150 times since 1990. I don't know when that was. But sometimes he would arrive early with donuts. Talk about Superfan. Does he come every day during the residency?
No, I don't think he come every day. But if they say I'm playing, he's there. And a lot of times I had to go down there once when I do my shows in January. You know, all January is not warm. And these people was lining up outside. And someone called and told me they was cooking hamburgers and feeding people out there to be the first one to get in, because we don't take reservations, you know. And he was one of the main people out there, and I got to know him better. And he got my logos in his yard now. And so so I think that's why they give him the name the Superfan.
We should shout out his real name. It's Mike Ellingworth.
Right.
My records and stuff. That's great. Mm-hmm. You got Bobby Rush on the 4th as the opening act to kick off the thing?
You know, Bobby and I are the last two. You know, Bobby was in Chicago. I've been in Chicago this year, 60 years ago, 1957.
Yeah, I was asking that. Yeah.
Bobby was here when I got here, but he moved back to Mississippi. I don't know how many years, but it's been a while. And you look around, and all of the greats that we learned so much from is no longer with us. And him and I was talking. Matter of fact, he called me the day before yesterday from New Rose, Louisiana. His auntie was kind of sick. And we were talking about we are the last two that's still alive that was in those days when Muddy Waters them just had quit playing. They was calling it back then Jewtown over there on Maxwell Street. Mm-hmm. And I never did play there. I don't think Bobby played there. But that's why the blues started when the Chess Records went over and found Little Walter and Muddy and all of them, Howlin' Wolf and all those guys over there on Sunday playing. And you went to sleep and woke up, and Bobby and myself are the last two from that era.
So January 4th at Buddy Guy's Legend 700 South Wabash, when you're in the room with him and you guys are playing, he opens the show, you come up. Does it take you to a different time? What do you think about? I mean, like you said, you're the last two standing.
Well, you know, we go back and everybody gets excited because we're so, for me, what we were doing back in the late 50s and early 60s, and nobody else is alive who's doing that. Some of the young people do it, but they would rather hear it from somebody who was there, like Bob and myself. You know, and I look at people and I see some guitar players or whatever instrument they play, they're good as me or better, but they still want to hear me or Bobby do it instead of these young people. Because when Muddy and them was in their prime, they was used to look at me and say, okay, you okay, but I want to hear Muddy, which I can understand that.
Yeah. Now, the flip side of that, also during your residency, you bring in younger acts.
Oh, yes.
So talk about some of the younger people might see in January and what it's like for you to mentor them.
Well, this young man, Quinn Sullivan, he's from Bedford, Massachusetts. And about, he's 17, 18 now. I met him when he was 7 years old. And when I'm doing a concert now that they can come when you play outdoor arenas and different things like that. And his daddy walked by with him, and he had a little polka dot bandana on with a guitar. And I looked down from my stage. I said, can you play? And most kids get excited and say, yeah, and they will play one or two notes, and I give them a big hand and try to boost them on. He just looked at me and said, yes, I can play. I said, well, I'll call you up. And I called him up. I had to go unplug the amp because I didn't believe. He was playing Eric Clapton, B.B. King, me, Jeff Beck, whatever you would call. And I said, 7 years old, you can do that. So he's got a date on. I don't have his date yet, but his show is sold out already. At the club next month, yeah.
What's the website? What's the
BuddyGuy.com.
Right.
And you can check out the dates there. I know we have Bobby Rush on the 4th. We've got Eddie Clearwater opening on January 5th.
And Ed is another one was here too. He's right around there with me and him and Bobby.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh. And then we should say Little Ed and the Blues Imperials at 9:30,
right,
opening on January 6th.
Mm-hmm.
What about younger musicians' influences? I mean, you had open ears. You would incorporate rock and roll. You would incorporate jazz. Do they incorporate other things now, like maybe hip-hop and even electronic music and stuff? There's so much music going around. Do they incorporate other stuff in their styles?
Yeah, but they confuse me with so much electronics now, man. You know, sometime when, you know, I was in the studio several years ago, and I made a, they cut a cut on me, and, you know, and I stopped and had to use the bathroom, and I come back out, they was playing it back, and I asked, who was it? And it was me, you know. So these young people are so creative now, man, so I have to sit back and listen, and as I kind of mentioned earlier to you, when I'm sitting in the club, I don't read music or nothing like that. When I hear someone else play, it don't have to be a guitar. It can be a keyboard player, a horn, anything. I learned that from B.B. King. Listen to everything. And I play by ear. Some of these young people, man, playing some things, I'm like saying, I've been had the guitar before you even thought of being born, and I didn't find that lick I heard you play just then. Which Quinn Sullivan, and they got another one coming out of Mississippi. I got them in the studio now called Kingfish. And they are playing, man. They are playing this stuff. But I hope they don't give up. You cannot give up. It's like a prize fight in the ring. If you lay down, you can't win.
Well, I got so many questions. We want to take a break, but...
I'm fine.
Yeah, but, I mean, the thing is there's... Outside of your club, and well, I mean, are there as many places for young people to play as there was
no.
when you were coming up?
I'm glad you asked that because in the beginning, the late Junior Weld, myself, and quite a few of us drove around all over the country in a van, Canada, even Europe. A lot of blues club disappeared because the drugs taken a lot out of the average person who had a little blues club could make a husband and wife could make a little decent living. Now they don't sell that much booze anymore. Plus, the DUI and non-smoking killed a lot of people. When I moved to this location now, people ask me, this club ain't going to be like it's a blues club because it's not smoking. So I said, well, maybe I should have put a barbecue grill in there before I open up and let it smoke the place up, and you guys will accept that.
We're going to take a break. Thank you so much for joining us. After the break, I want to do – you hit on something I wanted to talk about was your arrival in Chicago 60 years ago this year. So
September 25th, 1957.
So I want to talk about that when we get back with the great buddy guy on WGN. Welcome back to Nocturnal Journal on WGN. Seven-time Grammy winner, 37 Blues Music Awards. Is that right? Am I up to date? I missed a couple.
Yeah.
Kennedy Center Honors, the great buddy guy. Thank you so much for joining us and talking to us tonight. Now, we were just talking in the last segment about different musical styles, so there you go. That's a Chess track from about 1965, I'm guessing, the mid-60s. It's got that jump to it, though.
Yeah, and you know, the drummer there was Maurice White with Earth, Wind, and Fire. And he passed away, 2 years ago, I think. He was one of the house drummers there for that kind of music. And you had the late B-Lo for the shuffle with the blues with the little Walter type shuffle beats. But Maurice was the drummer there then.
It's a great track. Is that A.C. Reed on saxophone? That's a long time.
I think that was A.C., they used to just bring the horn players in for me. I didn't have a horn. Well, I kept one horn with me most of the time. A.C. played with me for a while, and that was a kid named Bobby Fields. He played for me for a while.
Yeah, how'd that sound? But that was kind of, well, it was mid-60s. Maybe the blues were changing a little bit, but it does have that great jump to it, that great swing to it. You know?
Well, I was trying to, Chuck Berry was so big then, and that's the kind of stuff that was playing on a Dick Clark show and so on like that. And I was trying to touch something to get my little records, hopefully on television, to get to play where I could probably sell 2 or 3 more albums, 45s or whatever it was back then. So after they brand you as a blues player, it was hard for you to go into Chess and they would let you play something like that. They wanted you to stick to what had made Chess records, which is Howlin' Wolf, Muddy Waters, and Little Walter and them.
You know? Yeah, yeah.
Jimmy Rogers, you know, Sonny
yeah.
Boy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I want you to take the listeners, like we've been talking about, you arrived here 60 years ago, and best as you can set it up, I went through some of the interviews we've done. I mean, and you take the story, it's your story. You arrive in Chicago from Louisiana at the Illinois Central Station.
63rd
okay.
in Dorchester.
Fat man's up. So tell me what happens when you get to Chicago.
Well, I got off the train. I looked up and said, meeny, meeny, miny, mo. I didn't know which way to go. And, yeah. and a stranger took me. It was a guy I had left Baton Rouge, and I knew him. And he was cooking for a chain of restaurant. I think they went out of business called B&G back then. And I went, and he would go to work around 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning, and I had to sit up all night till he had one of what you call a kitchenette,
mm-hmm.
and I would go sit up at a restaurant and wait till he go to work. Then I would go and go to sleep for an hour and get up and go try to find a day job the next morning.
I read, did you want to be a bus driver? I read somewhere you applied to be a CTA bus driver. Tronzo Cannon, he's been on the show. I know I don't know if he's still doing that, but.
I think I passed that test, but back then, you know, I'm not a politician. I know a little more now than I did then, but I think I passed that test to drive the bus because I didn't ever think I was good enough to be a professional musician. And they didn't tell me I passed the test, but they asked me, and said, go see your alderman now. I said, what's that? You know, because I wasn't aware of an alderman. So, you know, I don't want to get into that, but you had to go through that channel to get a job working for the city. The state or whatever, you got to come through that channel to get that job. I don't know if it's still like that or not now. It's not what you know, it's who you know
yeah,
back
right,
then.
Right.
Yeah.
What all did you bring with you?
I brought a guitar with a few clothes on my back. You know, I didn't have much. I had saved up about $600 and not changed the subject. But if I'd have known like I know now, I'd have went to Vegas with my $600 and bet that I'd have put $500 down that you'd had to buy water. And I'd have been the richest man in Vegas now. Because back then, there wasn't no such a thing as you buying drinking water, you know, and paying for free air in your tires and stuff like that. My brains wasn't that strong, because otherwise I'd have went in that direction. Because most of my family went to Vegas other than me.
And so you come up, you bring your guitar, and then you start going to clubs?
No, I didn't know okay. how to get to clubs okay. or nothing. I was just a country boy trying to look for a better job, because I was working at LSU in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and I was trying to find a college, and they had told me I could make at least almost double the money working doing the same work here as I was doing. Then my mother had had a stroke, and I could send more money back home. And I never could get the job. I come run, start running short on money, and I went to draw my unemployment. And they said, well, you got fired here. And I said, I didn't get fired. And they told me, said, well, you can go back to Louisiana. Then we can't give you no money. So on the third day with no food,
yeah.
A guy walked me to a famous blues club, 47th Street. It's called Club 47. It's on 47th Street in Evans on 47th Street. And the guy walked me in, and Otis Rush was on the stage, and I owe him my career now. And the guy said, I got a little man here can play the blues. Otis said, bring him up. Everybody else was asking me, who know you? How do I know you can play? And I didn't know it was that rough yet. You know, if you could say you could play, that's why I do these kids what I do now. So if you can play, come up, then I'll find out you can play. But they didn't give me that shot. They just told me who you played with or whatever. And Otis brought me up, and I played a Further On Up the Road by Bobby Bland and a Jimmy Reed number. And the guy said, I don't know who you are, but you hired. And somebody called Muddy, and he was living about 4 blocks away. And when I walked off the stage, before I left Louisiana, they told me, be careful in Chicago, because, you know, it's not like Baton Rouge. You can get mugged.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't know they called the Muddy Waters the Mud. So when I walked out the door, somebody slapped me up against my ear, and my ears were ringing, and I could hear voices saying, that's the Mud. I said, oh, they're going to mug me. And finally he said, "I'm Muddy Waters. I heard you was hungry." I said, "If you Muddy Waters, I'm full."
Muddy was, he just was great. He took everybody under his wing.
Everybody under his wing.
I mean, those stories I've heard about, like, even helping, when the Stones showed up at Chess, he even helped them load in and stuff. Is that,
I don't know if that was the first or the second time, but I was doing a record called My Time After Y, and they brought him in my studio like this. And I had never saw a white man with long hair like that and high heel boots. And I wanted to get pissed off because I didn't want nobody in the studio with me. And they said Muddy had helped them bring the instruments upstairs. But I heard different stories about that, but I didn't see that.
Yeah.
I didn't see they said Muddy was painting. And I don't think Muddy was painting the Chess studios, you know.
You and I have talked before, and I know there's talk now about a Gospel Music Hall of Fame opening again, and we've talked about the Blues Hall of Fame and the Muddy House. It just breaks my heart to see that shape, the
Me
shape
too.
Of that house.
Yeah.
Can you give a little State of the Union, a little address on how Chicago's taking care of it? Yeah, you just said earlier in the interview about all the tourists that come to your club. I mean, you know, blues tourism should be such a big draw for this city. And so give us a little State of the Union about how Chicago takes care of its musical legacy.
Well, I've been fighting for this museum for about 40 years now, and somebody finally heard me, and I think I had, I had some people with pretty well off the hip, man. One of my so-called friends now that live in Greenwich, Connecticut, he sent $2 million. And I think we just about got the museum off going. I don't know what date it's going to open, but he was at the Jazz Festival last May in New Orleans, and I told him I wanted him to be there when we open up.
Okay, we're going to take a break. I'll come back maybe one more segment.
Okay.
You doing okay?
I'm fine.
You all right? Okay, we'll be back with more on WGN's Nocturnal Journal. Welcome back to Nocturnal Journal on WGN 720. One of my favorite Buddy Guy tracks from Sweet Tea. Look at what you got. That's a T Model Ford song. Is that right?
No, I forget his name. That's not T. It might have been T Model Ford because they just dug that up because what they did, they surprised me. They told me they wanted me to come down and do some stuff what the old Mississippi guy was doing. And some of the guys I didn't know nothing about, you know. I hadn't met T Model. But I think that song was dead, but I can't call his name right now. He never did come out of Mississippi. And when I just heard the song, and I said, I can do that, you know. And this guy who produced that was just digging up stuff. And I said, man, I thought I had found everything in Mississippi that could be found. And they kept bringing stuff up that people I'd never heard of before.
I've talked to you before about that song. I keep asking you half jokingly, like, what is that on your shoulder? What is on your shoulder?
I don't know. You know, I just sang the song because someone else wrote that song. When I write a song, I can almost kind of explain to you the best of my knowledge what was on my shoulder. But I didn't write that. They just brought that album in and said, we want you to do this. And I would listen to it for 2 or 3 days, and then I would go in and do it.
Now, I've seen you do that. Do you still do that in your set?
I haven't done that lately. No, I haven't done that lately.
Okay, but you will have the residency kicking off on January 4th at Buddy Guy's Legends, 700 South Wabash. And how it runs till the end of January.
Well, we're doing 16 shows.
16 shows,
uh-huh,
right.
Thursday through Sunday.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And the website, what is the website again?
BuddyGuy.com.
Mm-hmm. You touched earlier on your arrival in Chicago. People know you about you with Chess and stuff, but talk about, you know, you talked about Otis Rush and talk about how you got into Cobra Records, which was pre-Chess.
Well, back then, you know, it wasn't no FM stations then. It was all AM station, and they had an AM station in Baton Rouge, and I know the jock pretty well, and he wrote a note for me to take it to Chess. And I went to Chess, and Chess was like any other big record company now that you got several people need to listen to what you got to offer, and they want a piece of the cake. Mm-hmm. And so it didn't work with Chess. So Otis Rush and the late Magic Sam took me to Cobra Records. And when I walked into Cobra Records, there was a great singer named Hal Barrage. And Magic Sam met me there. And the president of Cobra Records was named Eli. And as soon as I plugged my guitar by myself and I hit a note in the back, he came shaking with this contract for me to sign it. And I made my first album. He called in Ike Turner to help back me up on that first record.
Now, for listeners,
I Sit and Cry and Sing the Blues.
Yeah, right. Cobra was on the west side.
Yeah, on 12th Street.
Yeah.
12th and Homer.
Was there a different sound? We've talked about that before. Was there a different sound on the west side as opposed to the south side? It was a little more wide. Was Wayne Bennett was at Cobra, wasn't he? Did he play Cobra at all?
No, I met Wayne in Chess. The day I went into Chess to do my little audition for Chess, and I had a guitar, and Wayne was in a session with, I think, if I'm not mistaken, it was the Dells or somebody else, and they would let him use my guitar to make the session. I'm waiting to let Leonard or Phil, somebody here, what I had to offer, and they never did. So I just left, and later on got a chance after I met Muddy, to play a few places, and then the late Magic Sam, as I say, took me to Cobra Records, and that's when I made my first two 45s.
Was there a different sound on the west side than other parts of the city?
Well, actually, Cobra just had a garage, and he had that sound, man. He had some ordinary bow drums, you know, in the back, and he had some kind of way he could get that sound out of there. But everything was reel to reel, and if you made the wrong beat, they took a razor blade and cut it out. Now you can punch it out. Even at Chess Records, they used to have to take up the tape and they scratch it whoop, 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 until they get there, and then they splash it out with a piece of razor.
You got a new record coming out in
February?
Tell us what you can about that.
Well, they don't give me the name. I never give the name of the album. I leave that up to other people to title. I did title The Damn Right I Got the Blues because we did that in England, and they had cut everything, and the producer asked me, did you write anything? I said, yeah, you damn right I wrote something. And he said, that's the name of the album right there. So I don't know what they're going to call this one yet, but I understand the record company is kind of upbeat on some of the stuff we have done.
What would you say the style is? I mean, is it traditional? Is it progressive? Is it rock and roll?
I think I try to put a little everything in there because, you know, it's hard to say whether you're going to get airplay or not. Now, especially when you brand it as a blues player, you just hope you can hit some kind of record while they might have to just play it every once in a while, because like I said to you earlier, they don't play blues on your radio high no more. If you find, and I've been knowing some disc jockeys throughout the country for years, and every once in a while I want to come, I got a blues show, I come on at 3:30 in the morning. Well, my grandkid at 8 years old ain't going to hear you no way, because 3:30 in the morning he sleep. So hopefully we can sooner or later, if I don't do it, these young people that I'm trying to help out can pick it up and carry it on, and maybe they will come back and speak of Muddy or me just like I'm doing them.
Wow. Mm-hmm. How do you stay in such good shape?
I don't go crazy. Most musicians during the 60s, man, the Janis Joplin, the Grateful Dead, the Jimi Hendrix days and all that, they used to look at me, man, and say, man, you got to join us. And every time I think about that, my mother used to have a broomstick and it wasn't for sweeping. And she would tell me, actually, I went back down and says, I've been here. And she had that broomstick. She said, you tired? I said, no, I'm potting. And she just whacked me right across the chest, and I fell back across the bed, and I woke up the next morning. She said, now you can go. So I didn't keep up with the fast, and I don't know if that saved me or not. But right now, when I'm through playing, the pot is over.
Yeah,
I don't try to overdo nothing. That's including the food I eat. Don't care what you eat. I was talking to someone this morning and last night at my club. What can you eat now that next 6 months they're going to tell you ain't no good for you? They'll tell you it's good for you now, but ain't no good. Because I used to fry a drumstick. I had to get my mother's chicken off the yard, though. and a frying chicken drumstick was so big you could fry it on both sides and it was done, and there wasn't no such thing as salmonella.
Uh-huh.
Because I had blood all over my hand, didn't have water to wash it. So I didn't have that. So, but now they're talking about the sugary drinks causing obesity to the kids, but you feeding them that chicken drumstick big as a turkey leg.
Yeah.
And the kids eating that. So whatever we get now, including cigarettes, my parents, grandparents, all that chewed tobacco, dipped snuff, and smoked a pipe at the same time, and now one of them died from cancer. And if you had told me cancer, whatever type of cancer we're talking about, and the prostate or whatever, if when I was 12 years old, if you said that, I didn't even know what you was talking about.
Yeah.
Now it's like a common cold. Now you see a guy today and they say, oh man, next week he ain't got but 2 weeks to go.
Yeah.
Includes my late brother. You know, he wound up with prostate.
Yeah, talk about your brother a little bit, Phil Guy.
Well, yeah. he was a pretty good guitar player. He mm-hmm. could play rhythm and keep time on rhythm much better than me. Because he had played with the late Ray Fineal, which died from cancer, too.
Yeah, back in Louisiana.
Uh-huh. And all of a sudden, we kept it away from most of my family. A lot of people don't go. I make it simple. If you got a slow leak in your tire, don't wait till it go down. Go get it fixed before it go down. So that's what, you know, including myself. We wait till we hurting and can't hardly get to the doctor before we go to the doctor. Sometime you should go now. And I made the comment on the Blues Cruise that don't wait. Go see about the prostate.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And you're the spokesman, and that'll continue in 2018 for prostate cancer education.
The rest of my life, if I have to, because I hopefully, you know, I don't know if I can reach everybody, but if I can reach somebody, that would make me feel much better. Because, as I said earlier, this... There's so much going on now with this, and I don't know if they're just serving you something to keep you alive or what, because I talked to a lady from Washington, D.C., and she was in my club in charge, and I just played for a private guy four or five months ago in Germany. He flew me and my band over there, and he was the biggest pharmaceutical man in Germany. He's a guitar player. I'm going to meet him again. I didn't get a chance to ask him, is he just keeping me alive to buy his medicine, or he got a pill that I wouldn't have to take but once a month. So I don't know what's going on, but I ain't dumb as I look. So like I said, a lot of things going on now. The chicken, if you go to a chicken farm, now they got a hen. I saw this. The hen pecks a chemical for half an hour and go to sleep for half an hour and lay an egg, and go right back and peck for an half an hour, sleep for a half an hour, and lay an egg all day. And they ask, how long does that hen live at that rate? And the chicken farmer said, 2 years or two. And I said, what happened to it then? He said, Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Wow.
I don't know if he was joking or not, you know, man.
Well, thank you. We're going to sign off. I want to talk about this track. We'll sign it off. So the residency starts January 4th.
Yes.
Buddy Guy's Legends, 700 South Wabash. We played this a few months ago when this record came out. It's the Stones Blues Tribute. I think proceeds went to the Blues Experience Museum.
Right.
And you did Heartbreaker.
Yeah, but you know, I never heard it yet.
Really?
No, I did.
You never heard it?
No, I did. I did the song, but I haven't heard it played nowhere yet.
Oh, here on the radio. Well, what I wanted to, and I was telling Dan, about 3 minutes into the song, you kind of twist the lyrics and make them personal towards Chicago. I think it's really interesting. You talk about what's going on the streets of Chicago.
Yeah, well, you have to, you know, I've been here most of my life, 60 years, and Chicago deserve better than what it gets so far as music concerned, because the Stones were here. You can count the people that I got familiar with that came here, man, because Chicago was the capital blues city of the world. And as Chicago don't, if somebody, I brought it up over 40 years ago, because I said, even on State Street, they should have a Muddy Water statue out there. A Howling Wolf statue out there somewhere, mm-hmm. to let the world know, because there's a lot of foreign people comes to Chicago, man, just for the historical part of what was here years ago, and they don't see nothing. And each night my staff go to the microphones. How many people in here from Illinois? Hey. How many people in here from another state? Hey, how many people in here from another country? You can't hear nothing.
Well, you're down there, and you know, they built the new DePaul Arena, but they call it Motor Row. They should call it Music Row. You know, they're calling it Motor Row.
Well, you know, sometimes people need to be reminded what they should have done, and it's just like if I get drunk every night, I don't need you to tell me I'm getting drunk every night. I already know it. Yeah. But when you told me, I stopped. So I knew that before you told me. Yeah. So they know what Chicago should have here. So, but we done got a little progress since I've been fighting for it.
Yeah, well, you have.
Because if we come through with the museum, I'm going to be the happiest man that ever come to Chicago and learn what I know today.
So thank you so much for joining us.
And, thank you for having me.
Have a good New Year's Eve. What are you doing tomorrow night?
I just hang out with the people at the club. I meet and greet, and when they put the camera and the cell phone,
yeah,
they didn't do me no justice. Because
yeah.
I done got so now, when I'm driving down the street, I just have to say cheese and look through the window. You know, everybody wants to take a photograph of you. And one lady, then I leave you alone. One lady was from, I think it was New Zealand. And I had my son standing up there saying, please no more photograph, with a sign on his chest. And the lady come up and said, I come all the way from New Zealand. Will you please let me take a picture with you? I said, well, okay. She snapped the picture and went sat down for 20 minutes. Then she come back and she said, Mr. Guy, could you please let me take another one? I said, what happened to the one you got? She said, made me look too fat. I said, what do you think the camera saw?
So thanks again. Here's Heartbreaker with Buddy Guy.
Thank you so much, sir.
In Chicago, they chased a boy right through the park. Mistaken identity. They put a bullet right through his heart.